Looking for your next go-to smoke shop? Stop scrolling, I've got you. Headshop.com is the number one online smoke shop, already trusted by over 100,000 happy smokers, just like you. They've got it all. Dab rigs, vaporizers, glass bongs, smoking pipes, even THCA flower, all in one place. Need a new daily driver? Grab a smooth glass bong or a classic smoking pipe. More of a concentrate fan? Their dab rigs, e-rigs, and wax accessories are designed for smoother, harder-hitting sessions. And yes, they've even got legal THC flower. Best part? Every order ships fast and discreet, which is why thousands of smokers keep coming back. So don't waste time hopping between shops. Shop the best in dab rigs, vaporizers, glass bongs, smoking pipes, and THCA flower right now at headshop.com, the number one online smoke shop. Headshop.com has what you need. Check it out today. Oh, and because you're listening right now, you get 10% off your next order when you use the coupon code HSHOP at checkout. Go to headshop.com now and smoke smarter.
Omaha Steaks semi-annual sale is here. It's a sale so nice, they do it twice a year. Save 50% site-wide on the world's best proteins, like legendary steaks, gourmet burgers, versatile chicken, pork, seafood, and more. Plus, get an extra $35 off with code AUDIO when you shop omahasteaks.com today. Now is the time to save big on everything you need to serve up mouth-watering flavor, like USDA-certified tender steaks, perfectly aged to maximize tenderness and hand-cut by master butchers in America's heartland and delivered right to your door. With unrivaled quality and variety, every bite is backed by their 100% satisfaction guarantee. Don't wait. Shop now at omahasteaks.com and save 50% site-wide on steaks and more during the semi-annual sale. Plus, get an extra $35 off with promo code AUDIO at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code AUDIO. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details.
After a week off, Golden State Hoop is back. We're going to lead with the Valkyrie stuff and the WNBA stuff, because I think there's just more going on right now than there is going on with the Warriors. But we'll save that until the end, where we talk about the Warriors, because I do want to talk about Kristaps Porzingis. And I do want to get your thoughts on what we kind of expect to happen with Steve Kerr. I feel like this story, there hasn't been enough made out about whether or not Steve Kerr comes back to the Warriors. I think this is a giant story that it just feels like there's no real media coverage of yet. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about Yuste. You saw some Yuste. She played actual hoop that you watched. So we'll get some thoughts on that. Some WNBA mock draft stuff, as well as the CBA stuff. So let's kick it off. Let's talk some WNBA and some Valkyries. All right, you got to watch Yuste play. What did you think? I was kind of watching the back and forth in the Discord. It didn't sound like she played very well, and maybe even got yanked a little earlier than you thought. What have you seen from her game of late?
I'm more of like an off and on watcher. As she mentioned in the podcast we did with her, she plays for Girona, a Spanish team, and I probably put the pronunciation for that. But you know, they, someone in our Discord, another reason to join our Discord is Casta's kind of been on it way more than I have. He's been probably watched the majority of Girona's games. But I've been able to kind of catch some here and there, and they started off like the year kind of as one of the best teams. And it seems like they've kind of fallen back to earth. Maybe that's the departure of Valkyrie Leticia Amihir, who went to Unrivaled. She's not on that team now. And, you know, I feel like probably the record since she left hasn't been as great, but I haven't watched enough to know, you know, what really their issues have been outside of maybe, you know, Casta had mentioned that Yuste's scoring production has maybe gone down a little bit just because maybe teams are game planning against her better. They know, you know, that she's a primary focus and how to guard against her. But, you know, every time I watch her, I'm just like pretty impressed of like just how smart of a player she is. And even though maybe the shot's not falling as it was in the last game, you know, the rebounds and the playmaking's there. Like, it's not like she's a non-factor if she's in the game, you know. She's just a smart basketball player and is always just going to make the right play. I think sometimes you want to see like like the selfishness, honestly. You want to see her like, you know, take over and just like have a get the F out of the way. It's you know, I'm on a run right now. But I think she plays, you know, maybe it's, I don't know what it is, but you know, I think she ended the game with maybe like 3 points, you know, and she didn't score until like the fourth and like a heave, like a longer three. And I think she was wide open on that shot, but they played against Fenerbahce, and that's like the basically like damn near a WNBA all-star team. It has Misa Min, it has Gabby Williams, it has Uzun, it has K-Mac, it has Julie Alamon, it has Ileana Rupaire. Like there's just a ton of WNBA talent on that team, and they are always like historically a good team, at least since I've been paying attention, that it's a Turkish team. And who else? I think Monique Billings was on that team before she went to Unrivaled. But yeah, no, I mean, probably seen like, again, like maybe like 5 games off and on for Girona. And I think Yuste is going to be fine. Like when I watch, I'm just like, wow, she just like, she's so good at just that 3-point shot just looks so good. And I am just like, I can't wait until she's able to get more wide open looks with the Valkyries.
Now, the offense that she plays in right now compared to the Valkyries offense, is there anything you can take from, you know, her usage, how often she's getting the ball? Like, it sounds like she's very much a team player, so she's not always looking for her shot. But as we saw last year with the way that they ran their offense, like, the whole goal is to put up as many 3-pointers as humanly possible.
Right, so her play style kind of fits with that if she's going to be able to just get these 3-point shots. I wonder how much they're going to use her in, like, say, the pick and roll or something, because I feel like when I watch her at Girona, she's not as much involved on, like, the on-ball action as it is, like, just kind of being a catch-and-shoot player, which I, you know, again, only watched, like, a select few games, so I haven't really seen everything, but I feel like that's a misuse of her talent, and she has to be more on-ball. She has to be more involved in pick-and-roll action to be able to generate, like, a mid-range look that she can hit. But you know, there's stuff that she needs to work on, and I think she knows it too, and she mentioned it on the podcast, but defense and just getting stronger. Right. But you know, other than that, I'm always pretty like impressed when I watch her play, just considering how young she is. You know, I think she's 20 or she's yeah I think she's 20 and just, you know, being that smart about playing the game is always impressive to watch.
Now, I remember our conversations about her earlier in the season. It seemed like earlier in the season you were like, she's gonna be a perfect fit, like she's gonna do everything that they need her to do. But maybe over the time span and then this last game that you watched, I wonder if she is wearing down a little bit just from so many games and, you know, the yeah, thing that she said that she needed to work on.
Yeah, and I think Eurobasket is, you know, when she plays for Lithuania, she is like the far and away best player. So like she's, you know, the focal point and she's involved in almost, you know, 75% of the actions. But when she plays for, you know, her Spanish team, it's definitely much less than that. And I would still say she's probably like one of the best players, but there are more experienced veteran players that are confident with the ball in their hands to run an action and to play the point. So she's probably just less featured. But yeah, no, I think teams are probably game planning her against her a little more. Like I would say the scout would be physical and you know, play up in her grill and see if she makes the wrong call and the wrong pass. I think most of the time she makes the right one, but I could see how you can get it under her skin a little bit by just playing a little more physical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, it's going to be interesting as we are at the end of February here. We'll talk about the CBA here in a second, but they put a deadline in, and it's like this stuff, if we have a season, it is going to be revving up really quickly. Like games within, 2 months? Like if the schedule stays what it's supposed to be. So that means she's coming off of this season that she's having, and she'll probably have a small break and then right back into it, kind of like how the college players are gonna handle it.
That's, I mean, we say it, you know, probably once every couple weeks. That's why, you know, the Athletics WNBA show is called No Off Season, because they're covering women's basketball year round. But not just they're covering it, is that the players are also playing hoop year round, the majority of the players, except for I think just Caitlin and Asia. Mm-hmm. And I think this year Sabrina, but everyone else is basically just in a league year round, whether it's Unrivaled, whether it's an international league with the Turkish, Spanish, Euro League. It's just the, you know, AU in Tennessee. or in Nashville. And yeah, there's nonstop hoops, college to the W really quickly. You know, who were we waiting on? We were waiting on Janelle Salon last year to come to the Valkyries because she was in, what team was she playing for? Was it the, no, it wasn't. It wasn't the French league. I think it was the Turkish league, maybe the finals or something. Or so I forget which league she was, but she was in like the finals, legit like finals MVP as the training camp was starting. So they had to wait for her to get there. And as they were making cuts, they was just like, yeah, Janelle's not getting cut. Like she's in the finals right now and about to be a finals MVP for this league and this team.
So let's we're going to push any unrivaled conversation into next week because the playoffs are going to start soon. And although I will mention the one-on-one stuff was actually pretty fun. Chelsea Gray mopped up with everybody to win it.
And how great was it that was like simultaneously happening as like this, you know, the 3-point and dunk contest,
terrible dunk contest was happening.
That was good. Yeah. Probably good publicity for them. Is it like, look, oh, these women are playing ones and this is the thing that the men are embarrassed to go for.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Steph, after the 3-point shootout, he's like, we got to get the band back together. We need to make this funny, the event.
I remember it was a dunk contest maybe like 2 years ago or something. And they were starting to do like a next year, like, oh, Jaws on the phone with Anthony Edwards after this one. Oh, let's see if we can get whatever happened to that, man. That was not that long ago. And they were trying to do the same. I think Steph and Dame and Clay are actually going to do it, though.
Yeah, because they're made. They're not insecure. They don't have to worry about missing a dunk and being on.
And I know that dunk contest thing's a little more layered. Like, you know, there's just the negatives far outweigh the positives. Like, you know, maybe you're not getting paid out for it. You could have Jace Richardson moment where you just hit the back of your head and you're a forever meme on the internet.
That poor dude.
So I see that. I know that it's layered and that the negatives can outweigh the positives. But man, just from a fan perspective, we kind of just want you to be like, yeah, you make $30 million a year. Go out and perform. Like, I want to see a show.
I don't know. I don't know if anyone else has ever been injured in a dunk contest, but it doesn't, you know, it is a very explosive event. And so there is possibility, but it's really more about the emotional part of it than the physical part of it for these guys. Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about the current situation with CBA. So the league, the most recent news is that the league basically said to all of the teams and to the Players Association that they need to have a handshake deal by March the 10th or the season could be impacted. Now, there's not really too much detail about what that means. Like, does that mean they lose games? Does that mean that things get, chunked closer together? Because all of these things still have to happen. You know, we have two expansion teams who don't even have the list of players that they can draft, not had the expansion draft yet. We still have a free agency. We have the thing before the free agency, which is the teams who, if we still have this rule that allows them to core their players, like that happens kind of before free agency, and then you still have the draft. So there's so many things that are left to happen, and they finally put a date in and said we need to do this or things are going to get impacted. I don't know. Do you feel like that's going to create some urgency, or does it really matter? Because what they're arguing about, it's like whoever blinks first loses.
Yeah, because it was the WNBA that, you know, that like made this handshake deadline, right? Like, I don't feel like the players are, they're like, the WNBA is trying to create some sense of urgency, like, okay, you know, and there is urgency, right? Like we, how much stuff would have been completed by now? Like you already mentioned a couple of things, expansion draft, the coring, you know, thing and free agency. And but I just feel like the WNBA, like as of a most recent proposal, it just felt like the two sides were still so far apart. I just don't see the WNBA Players Association being like really phased by that deadline. Like that's more.
There are a couple of positive things that have happened of late, though. The first thing is that they finally hit their revenue sharing target, because the deal that they signed before the pandemic they had to hit a certain revenue share. They had to hit a certain target, and then the disbursement of extra funds would happen. Because of COVID and everything after COVID, they did not hit those revenue sharing targets. But this past year, they did. So that's a positive thing.
Why I want to know, though, why it was it reported on why it took that long to come out? Was it genuinely just like, okay, we didn't have the calculations until now? Or was it like the league was trying to hide something like that? Because that bodes in the player's favor of being like, see?
Or it bodes into the owner's favor saying, okay, maybe these revenue sharing targets aren't hard to get. And if you work with us, we can set them so that both sides are happy. Like, you, I think it could go both ways. I'm not saying that, you know, this is necessarily something only positive,
true,
you know, for that sense. So I think that's a positive thing that happened. And I guess the next thing that happened is, you know, they did come to some sort of agreement on smaller things. So it shows that they are working a little more closely together, and maybe there are some concessions happening. But it's still, the big one is going to be about the salary cap. And they're both looking at it from different perspectives, which is kind of interesting, because the players want, at I think it's 27.5% of the gross, and the league is saying, no, we'll give you X number of whatever the net is. But if you look at it from a gross perspective, it's probably like closer to like 15% gross or something like that. So I think, and I looked at this, and you know, there's some really sharp people who are putting together some great pieces when it comes to this stuff. And I think last year they were at like under 10% gross, the revenue that the players got. So to ask for to be from under 10% to jump up to 27.5%, that's a pretty big jump. You're more than doubling. Now, should the league do more than just, you know, times it by 1.5, maybe they should. Maybe that should be a little bit more, again, in the negotiation. What I was thinking, I wonder what would happen. Now, whatever way you want to explain it, whether it's through gross or through net or through whatever, but what if the league got closer to 20 and said, you guys want 27.5, we'll get to 20. And over the 5 years, you know, you hit these markers and it eventually gets to 25. I wonder, and that may be what they're doing right now, for all we know. We haven't heard anything about that. But I wonder if the league is actually working towards that, or if they're like hardlined at, you know, at what they're saying right now. Because the players will have to come down, the league will have to come up. Will they meet in the middle? I don't know who has the leverage there. But when you're talking about March 10th being 2 weeks away, a little bit less than 2 weeks away, like, I'm hoping that there's some movement. I'm hoping that these talks are happening. And the problem is that, you know, again, it's about who's blinking first. The league, I think, I forget how long it took for the league to send in a new proposal. And then they send in their new proposal, and then they're like, well, the players aren't acting in enough urgency. And the players are like, it took you guys like over a month to get us the last proposal, so quit. You know, it's really about this public perception stuff.
Right.
But the problem with these negotiations and them being so public is there's a trust that is like right in front of our eyes. The trust is just slowly going away. So, and who knows? We don't know how much trust there was there in the first place, especially when Nafisa Collier talks about the owner and the way that she did from Jump Street. So I'm hopeful that we can see some progress, you know, and maybe that March 10th date is really not a real date. Maybe it was like, maybe the real date is really like March 17th and they can still do everything. But you're really just trying to get them back to the table and get them working. So I'm hopeful. This podcast is hopeful. If we don't have a season, I have no idea what we're going to talk about. You know, if we do have a season, all of this stuff is going to be truncated in a small amount of time. So we're going to have tons of stuff to talk about, maybe too much stuff to talk about. So that's that, and we'll circle back when we hear. Like I'm constantly looking at the Athletic app, looking for Sabrina's name, and going like, okay, I want to see what Sabrina says about this. So I'm on it. I'm looking for anything and everything that comes to that comes up about this. Okay. The thing that I wanted to get your thoughts on was our friend Conrado Pascual, who's been on this show a couple of times already. He put out his mock draft. Now, Conrado, he writes for the Center Hub. He's the digital content person for the Center Hubs. Actually, I don't know how much writing he's doing, but I know that's his jam right now. He's also does a podcast called East Meets West. And he put together a mock draft that I thought was pretty interesting because he has been steadfast that Awafem should not be the number one pick.
Yeah.
And every other mock draft I have seen says that Awafem is going to be the number one pick. So very interested to see or to hear your thoughts on his board. So I'll read out his top four, because he also has a couple other players that are higher on this list than what we saw from Sabrina's mock draft from the other day. Okay, so he has AZ Foot at one. She is, by the way, almost 4 years older than Awafem. He has Awafem at two, Lauren Betts at three, and Kiki Rice at four. Now, I called this a mock draft, but he calls it a big board. So this has nothing to do with where the teams may want to draft.
Yeah, he's saying these are just the best.
More to do with who he believes are the best players. So if you when we bring him on, we'll have a discussion over what players fit some teams better. But what did you think of that four as far as the big board?
Yeah, I mean, like cards on the table, like I do trust Conrado, you know, more than, you know, myself, my own opinion on a lot of this stuff, just because of how much time he's put in and how, you know, I haven't put in as much. But I think that, you know, just from a what I value, NBA and WNBA is like, you know, from a prospect's perspective, like, I don't think you can go wrong at AZ and Awafem one or two. I probably would lean Awafem just because of, you know, her size and the way she moves at 6'3", and the way she passes for a big, and you know, the way that she could play defense, and like, you know, and also the fact that she's 4 years younger than AZ Foot. Like, I just think that there's a lot of potential there, and it's a lot of realistic potential and not really like this, you know, project type of potential. It's more like you could see like the scalability and see like, okay, someone who plays that defense that well, who's this young and, you know, moves the way she does at this size, like this almost feels like a kind of can't miss prospect. And I'm not saying she's going to be like some MVP type of player. I think that, you know, we're looking at, you know, her floor is probably like, you know, high level starter, and her ceiling is like all W type of player. And with AZ Fudd, you know, she was a former number one high school recruit the year after Paige. And she's a fifth-year senior, and she's an incredible ball player. Like, I think that she's the best three-point shooter in the in college, and will, you know, achieve that height in the WNBA. Not like it will not take that long for her to be like top three-point shooter in the league. I think she's also a can't miss type of prospect. Like, I don't see a world in where AZ Foot is a bad player ever. Like, I don't. It's really just injury dependent, and you haven't had to worry about an AZ Foot injury in a while. Whereas she kind of did start her college career with a lot of injuries. But you know, I think that honestly, both of these prospects are prospects that will fit on whatever team you put them on. It does not matter. So I think kind of looking at the links, just like their ability to potentially just add AZ Fudd to an already great roster is just like a little unfair. And you know, she's just gonna do all the right things. She's a great defender, great 3-point shooter. I think my pause with her as a player, it's just her being able to, you know, initiate self-creation looks at the next level. I don't know if Conrado anticipates that, if that's going to be a strength of hers, or he's just kind of like, look, like, you know, this player can play defense at a high level and is going to be one of the best 3-point shooters in the league. Like, that already alone in a weaker class should be considered a number one player. And I would agree with that. And, you know, maybe he does buy the self-creation, and I would probably agree with that too. But I think in terms of just what I value as a prospect, I'd go Awafam one. In terms of Lauren at the three, for me, like, I think the way like I would maybe feel about that type of selection is that you just don't really believe in many of the other prospects, because I think Lauren Betts is a good basketball player. I've watched her a lot. I just don't really buy the archetype of, like, I feel like we're fading away from the 6'7", you know, center that can't shoot. But she's a great passer. She's a great defender. She moves well. Like, I don't know. It's just, you know, her not being able to shoot the three and, you know, her maybe being able to be at the next level targeted on the perimeter if you want to get a switch and go by her. Or, you know, I just feel like some of the best teams don't really utilize that type of height in their player. Like, you know, Asia Wilson's the best player in the league. Like, they weren't really throwing out, you know, someone who's that tall with her. It was more like she, in the most important moments, it's like she's one of the tallest players on the roster. And but, you know, I think the obvious omission is Olivia Miles, who I think just I could see why she's not there, but I would probably have her there just because I think that, you know, I value IQ and passing, and I think she's the best out of anyone here with that. She's just incredible with, like, her vision. And, like, I remember watching her for the first time in college, and I think it was honestly last year because she missed her entire sophomore year, or it was her junior year. One of the years she missed, Hannah Hidalgo's rookie year, she missed that entire year with injury. And so when I watched her, when her and Hannah were on the court together, I was just like, holy crud. Like, I felt like I was watching, you know, like men's college basketball or even the NBA, just the way that she could come off a pick and roll and just, like, dish it to someone, and just, like, it's picture perfect, and it's just, like, no look, and it's flashy. And I was just like, whoa. Like, I think the question for her has always been the 3-point shooting, but I think the percentages look good. I will say that jump shot has never looked good to me, like, just in terms of the way it looks. So I guess you just, if you buy it, you buy it. And then I imagine she's probably a 2 or 3 prospect for you. If you don't, you don't. And I could see how she falls. But I think for me, I would just have her in that top three just in case, like a what if, like it translates to the next level. Because if it does, then you're looking at, like, you know, you're looking at an all-star, honestly, in my opinion. Kiki at the four, I feel like she's just kind of been, she's been like a slow riser, I feel like, in draft boards. Like, she was a high recruit coming out of high school. And then I think this, you know, draft class this year, I felt her stock kind of fall, and now I feel like it's coming back up. You know, we watched her play. We like her if she does all the right things. You know, so I'm fine with
that. She doesn't test off the board. She just looks like a steady, really good basketball player.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So that is his first tier. His second tier is Nell Angloma, Iana Martin, Flauge Johnson, Olivia Miles at 8, which is where the Valkyries actually draft. But again, this is not a mock. This is a big board. And then Tania Latson at 9. Jaquez would be in the next tier at 10, and we've talked about her a lot. But yeah, I just thought, you know, I thought it was interesting to see. When we do bring him on, we'll ask him sort of about fits, you know, here and there. And just the fact that he in his big board, where I'm sure age is not as big of a deal as it would be on in a mock. Mm-hmm. You know, he's got AZ Fudd, who's 23, Lauren Betts, 22.5, Kiki Rice, 22, Olivia Miles at 8 is 23. So the Awafam being under 20, Nell Angloma still being under 20, Iana Martin being barely over 20, that is going to matter in some of these mocks. It's just the age of these women, and, you know, as
that matters. But also, like, you could probably anticipate, well, I guess it might change now considering the CBA is agreed on, and then you have more money in the W. But, you know, some of those players may get asked by the teams to stash for a year. And
now, I think one of the things that they may, I don't know if this is 100% agreed upon, but I think they are adding roster spots. So
maybe have like a developmental roster spot.
You have developmental roster spots. They don't have enough players necessarily to have a developmental team or league. So they may still want them to go play overseas because they're not getting those reps. But
yeah.
You know, you think about how the Warriors use their, you know, the last 2 or 3 spots on the bench, like guys who aren't necessarily going to play, but they practice and, you know, they have to be ready. But they're also not like your tippy top prospects, because you want those guys to probably play a little bit more in the G League than to just sit on the bench.
The only thing is that like those leagues don't run at the same time. So it's like, yeah, stay in France and, you know, prepare for your Euro team. But that league doesn't even start until the W is over anyway.
They're going to have to invest in a G League type of thing for sure. I mean, it doesn't have to be, you know, as expansive as it is in the NBA, because I know it's probably harder to run than we think. But heck, I'd be down to have a San Jose, you know, whatever G League WNBA team that plays at the San Jose State Event Center. I'd be down with that. I'd go watch. Yeah. So, all right, let's talk some Warriors hoops here for a few minutes.
Looking for your next go-to smoke shop? Stop scrolling. I've got you. Headshop.com is the number one online smoke shop, already trusted by over 100,000 happy smokers, just like you. They've got it all. Dab rigs, vaporizers, glass bongs, smoking pipes, even THCA flower, all in one place. Need a new daily driver? Grab a smooth glass bong or a classic smoking pipe. More of a concentrate fan? Their dab rigs, e-rigs, and wax accessories are designed for smoother, harder hitting sessions. And yes, they've even got legal THC flower. Best part? Every order ships fast and discreet, which is why thousands of smokers keep coming back. So don't waste time hopping between shops. Shop the best in dab rigs, vaporizers, glass bongs, smoking pipes, and THCA flower right now at headshop.com, the number one online smoke shop. Headshop.com has what you need. Check it out today. Oh, and because you're listening right now, you get 10% off your next order when you use the coupon code HSHOP at checkout. Go to headshop.com now and smoke smarter.
Kristaps Porzingis, you got to watch the one game that he played in. I missed that game because I just saw that they were losing by so much. They did come back in the end, but I was like, I don't want to watch this. I get too depressed watching bad basketball. How do you think Kristaps fit? How did he look? Do you think this is going to be an option for them next year? What were your thoughts off of his 20-minute performance or whatever it was?
I feel like they kind of played better without him, but I'm not going to like fault him to that. Like, cause there was a little bit of a fake comeback in the fourth. I mean, they were only down by like 12, but I think he's a fine player when healthy. It's kind of hard to evaluate this kind of stuff because,
and he's only played one game cause he's been sick since.
Yeah. And is like, you know, illness is not like Celebrini, hey, go check on his ankle. It's like a immunosystem. Like, you know, it's kind of hard to evaluate, but
yeah, and I wonder how that is going to affect his off season, because is it going to be better for him just to go, you know what, I'm just going to stay here. I'm going to play one more year, take a smaller deal. Because his future is so up in the air and dependent on health. And the health thing is just on top of already the injuries that he had to deal with as the, you know, the original unicorn. And I just don't believe that he's ever going to be even a 60 player, 60 game player per season ever.
Yeah.
Again.
Like, we're not going to be able to get like a random fully healthy Otto Porter Jr. season, and then, you know, everything before that and everything after that is so like injury riddled, but we got him for that 1 year. It's probably not going to happen with Kristaps, just given, you know, the situation and given his health status. And yeah,
but you got to think though, because I don't know how else you would think. Jimmy comes back next year, you still have Draymond, you still have Steph, you bring back Porzingis. And I guess you hope one of these younger players kind of uses the end of this season to come into their own, whether it's...
I mean, it's looking like both Pods and Moody are, you know, doing that right now.
It's kind of... I've been impressed watching Moody, because as we've said, sometimes we were like, wow, he plays really good. And then we were like, okay, but he's playing with Steph. What does he look like when he plays without Steph? And it wasn't as good. But now he's played all these games without Steph, and he looks good. You know, he does the Moody stuff. As long as he stays within himself and doesn't try to do too many things. Like sometimes all of a sudden he'll pump fake and he'll come down the baseline. And I'm like, is this dude going to try to yam on somebody? And no, he kind of gets stuck and has to make the pass out. But I've liked what he's done. D'Anthony Melton has been really good. You know, if D'Anthony Melton is your sixth man,
I gotta imagine he's gonna get tons of offers in the offseason.
That's tough. Yeah, because like I was thinking about it today, like where does DeAnthony Melton rank in like the Warriors, like non big name players, like since, you know, since the championship year, like, you know, since like Otto Porter Jr. and, you know, since Dante DiVincenzo, since Ty Jerome, even that year, like I just feel like Melton's like might be the best one out of all of them. And because of that, is he playing himself out of a Warriors contract? And if so, like that's a big blow. Like he's really been, you know, I think he's been like awesome. Like every time I watch him, it's just like, man, just imagine what this team would have looked like, maybe more healthy. And that's a bummer. I feel like this kind of has maybe some 2022, 2023 Warriors, if that, written all over it, where it's like maybe you sneak a good round, like they had, like they were last year. You sneak around and then you lose. But you look back at that 2022 team and it's like, wow, you had Dante DiVincenzo and, you know, JP was on that team and Ty Jerome was on that team. And although he wasn't activated for the playoffs, but it's like there were some guys on that team that weren't, you know, fully as evolved as they are now. But had we had them at that state, it's like, look at what we had. And I wonder if, you know, that's, you know, kind of the direction that they're headed.
Player for player, money, age, longevity doesn't matter. Like Melton over Pods every day of the week right now. Like It's not even close, I don't think.
And Pods has played really, like, did you get to catch that Nuggets game?
Like 15 rebounds the other day.
He was like actually on a heater in the fourth quarter. Like he like took it upon himself to just take hard shots and all of them were falling. It felt like.
And that's the problem, right? Is he can play like that, and then the next game he just plays terribly, and people start hating him again.
The thing with Pods, though, is I feel like I've kind of been saying it all year. Is like the stuff usually looks right. It's just a matter of like sometimes that ball falling, and sometimes it's really bad misses, like off the side of the backboard, or like just a complete miss of the rim. And it's like, man, how do you miss that badly? But I kind of almost think like he needs the rebounds to like get him going a little bit. Like if
the rebounds and the charges, it seems.
Yeah. Like he's been on an upswing lately and, you know, the rebounds have been quite up. So we'll see.
And then our guy, and I was very interested in your thoughts on him. Is Gui Santos a rotational piece?
Is that the question?
Yeah. Do you think he is a rotational piece on the Warriors?
I think without a doubt, he's played himself into, you know, a rotational piece. And, you know, I guess we'd have to look at the roster once healthy if it's, you know, where he kind of falls. But I wonder, like, you know, as the podcast conversations from Plus Minus and Simmons and all TK show, it's like, you know, maybe Draymond comes off the bench and is like, do you start Gui next year? Do you start like Steph, Melton, Gui, Jimmy, KP? Like, would that be, you know, what the starting lineup would look like? Or, you know, so I think that Gui has started to really understand, you know, the Draymond role offensively. Like, he's just always, like, when Steph was there, he was looking for Steph a lot. And, you know, he realizes that he's not the most talented offensive player or most athletic. So you kind of have to play a little more tricky, whether that's, you know, just a hard pump fake at the rim and a defender flies by and you get an easy layup. Like, how many times he does that so much? But I wonder if, you know, he could be a starter for this team. I think he's good, and I think the 3-point shot looks really good. And yeah,
all right, let's end with this because I know you have somewhere to go. Wait, what movie are you seeing again?
The Revenant. I've never seen it. It's in IMAX.
Is that the Leo movie with the bear?
And it's the Alexander or something Iñárritu. He's the one who's actually directing. The Tommy Cruise, Judy, or I don't know, what's it called? Digger. So, I mean,
I've never seen The Revenant either.
And he also directed Birdman. So, I mean, the IMAX always does, like, they were partnered with, like, A24 for a while, where they were just putting up A24 re-releases on IMAX. So, I saw Moonlight for the first time last year, and that was awesome to see in IMAX. And, you know, there's just any time, like, I'm just so lucky to have an IMAX at my local AMC because I have the AMC A-list and I just get the IMAX, you know, as a quote unquote free because I pay, you know, X amount of money per month. But the
sometimes
IMAX ticket
I
alone
get notifications and it's like, you bought this ticket. And I was like, when did I buy this ticket? It's like, oh, Brian bought this ticket.
Yeah, man.
Real quick, just because we were talking about it. But I was talking to some folks And I talk about IMAX all the time. And a lot of folks who live in smaller cities are like, yeah, my IMAX screen is 2 hours away. So I feel bad. Now you actually have a real IMAX screen. I have a fake one.
You have a real one. I just have the supercharged one. Like, you know, yours looks like, you know, the majority of the country's IMAX screen.
But they're not super duper like real IMAX. Like they're bigger, but like that one that you have, that's like the real deal. I have two actually within 10 miles from me, so I'm actually pretty lucky.
Yeah.
That's good. Let's talk about the last thing so you can get out of here, which is Steve Kerr. Now, I think this is the underreported story for the Warriors. We know that he is a lame duck coach in the sense of he doesn't have a contract next year. So he's coaching this year, and it seems preferable to him. I don't know if it's preferable to Lacob. I don't know if this frustrates Lacob. I don't know if this is what Lacob wants. I cannot read Lacob.
Did you listen to the TK show?
Yeah, but he just seems irritated all the time now. Like, I can't gauge if Lacob is like Lacob. Just usually Lacob is hyperbole and positivity and, you know, tech CEO mindset. And then just recently he's kind of been edgy and kind of frustrated, which is good because I don't want him to be happy and the Warriors are not that good. But if the Warriors run back what you said, bring back KP, bring back Melton, bring back Steph, Draymond, Jimmy,
Horford.
Who better to coach this team than Steve Kerr? I can't imagine, unless there's somebody in the pipeline right now who is Warriors adjacent, who is like, he doesn't want to coach. He doesn't want to deal with people.
I mean, but who else? Like, I mean, I don't even really mean the Iguodala thing seriously, but you're right. Like, this is totally like a Steve Kerr team, and it feels like anyone other than him coaching would be, you know, not the right call. I can't really think of many other candidates that, you know, outside of a former Warrior player, like, it wouldn't make sense. Like, this is Steve Kerr's system. This is Stephen Curry's system.
Yeah.
It would not make sense for him not to coach. And, you know, I kind of feel like Lacob and Kerr don't really have like this, you know, personal relationship after working together for as long as they have and experiencing as much success together as long as they have. And I guess it makes sense. Like, he's the big boss. But that's kind of the vibe I got.
I'm looking on their current staff. I think I'm not 100% sure, but I think Terry Stotts is the only guy with actual coaching experience.
Like head coaching experience.
Yeah, head coaching experience.
Yeah, I mean, it would have made sense maybe if Atkinson was still here. It would have made sense if DeMarco, you know, maybe didn't go to the Liberty. Like those
go to Liberty,
two,
man.
You know, DeMarco especially has been there since, you know, as long as Kerr's been there, I'm pretty sure. So
still needs to return your text.
Man, I've never gotten a text back from that guy. But no, there's no one else who I can, you know,
Jerry Stackhouse? No, I mean, are they grooming Stackhouse to become a head coach?
I mean, I feel like he'll be a head coach maybe someday. And I just feel like the Kerr handoff for Warriors coaches is going to go internally. And I think it's supposed to, like, I think it's like, you know, it's going to be when the Steph stuff is over, and the Steph, it would just feel wrong if it isn't. And then they go seek externally. I feel like that's not the Warriors way. They've been doing this internal stuff, you know, especially looking at the Dunleavy hire, how that was an internal hire, and seems like I think that's good. And I think that has, you know, I think as well as they've done stuff on the basketball court, I think it's smarter to kind of have internal hires rather than go externally and just like, this is the way we do things, and you go up the ladder. And
so I mean, it would just be go weird. Back to what you were saying with Atkinson. I mean, Mike Brown, do you hope that he gets fired by the Knicks? I don't think that's going to happen.
He has like a little Sala, Robert Sala, like type of reunion. And then he gets hired again.
I mean, I'm trying to think of other, like Luke Walton's name is not out there anymore as far as a legitimate guy.
Yeah, but we're not happy about like really, these don't seem like great options.
Yeah, I just don't see the, like, that. This is what I'm saying. The story is underreported unless nobody believes that Kerr's going anywhere.
I just don't believe it yet, but I know that it's been like, I know that it's being talked about more and more, and you can kind of see that. I think Simmons talked about it, right? Like, mm-hmm. Simmons
talked
about
his
show.
He's not coming back.
Yeah, and then TK's talked about it late on the what is his show called with the LA guy? The North Meets South or something?
North and South, yeah.
North and South. Yeah, he talked about it too, and
the Simmons comment caused TK to drop like 3 F bombs in like a sentence.
He did say that. I just don't buy it. I don't buy it. It wouldn't make sense. And
it scares me is what it does, yeah, because it doesn't seem like the Warriors necessarily have a plan. Now, maybe Lacob's plan is we're just going to go hire like the biggest name possible of whoever is out there. But I don't know who's out there. So so we'll see.
In terms of like importance to like the Steph Curry era, if you use like Dunleavy, Clay, Dre, Steph, Kerr, like you could say Steph's by far the most important, but Kerr's like second, right? Like you'd probably say like Kerr is the second most important of this, you know, dynasty.
Kerr or Clay or Draymond, like, you know, I'd probably say Kerr as well, just because he's the consistent
architect.
Dre has been very valuable.
Totally.
Like Clay left and, they're still competitive. So, but you know, the three of them, the four of them, I guess you should say, have the titles together. So there is something to the idea of, you know, the unit and the consistency and the understanding of each other. But it's gotta be hard. And, you know, we forget all the back injuries that Steve went through over the years. Remember, he was always gone.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
all of a sudden, you know, you have other people coaching and it's like, oh, is Steve Kerr ever going to get back? So, I guess the last thing about this coaching thing is, you know, could Joe Lacob, by not securing Steve Kerr, could that change the relationship with Curry? I think that's really what everyone's biggest fear is that are they a pair? And if one is not handled correctly, does that affect the other one? That's kind of my biggest fear here.
But you know that, you know, one's like bulletproof. Like, I feel like Steph isn't going to have to worry about, you know, have the stuff that maybe Steve is worrying about.
What if Steph is not happy?
Yeah,
that's the worry. So anyways, I'm sure that'll be a discussion that we have more closer to the end of the season, but it looks like the Warriors are just going to sit in the eighth seed no matter what. And play the Clippers in the first play-in. Is that what it's looking like?
Jeez, they're kryptonite.
I know, but no Harden. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit of a different team, and who knows with Kawhi. So
Kawhi's like giving up and his team's like playing hard.
I mean,
but I don't blame him. They had traded two high level starters.
I guess it would technically be Warriors Suns. Is that I always forget how they do the play in.
Well, it's 9-10 versus 7-8, and then loser of 7-8 and winner of 9-10 play.
Yes, the Warriors Suns would be first round. Or the first play-in, I guess, technically. But the Lakers are not that far out. I thought the Lakers were so much more ahead
now
than
where
the Warriors are, but they've been pretty average like the Warriors of late. So there might be some movement. There might be some 6-8 movement if Steph can come back and get hot. But
yeah,
I'm not holding my breath on that one.
If he does, it's just 2022. Like, that's just what it's looking like.
Okay, so that's it from here. We'll be back next week. Like I said, we'll talk some Unrivaled. We'll be able to see. Hopefully, Steph is on his way back by the time we record again. And more stuff with the WNBA and their labor negotiations. So, all right. That is it from here. For Bri, I am Double G. We will see you when we see you. Peace out.
Looking for your next go-to smoke shop? Stop scrolling. I've got you. Headshop.com is the number one online smoke shop, already trusted by over 100,000 happy smokers, just like you. They've got it all. Dab rigs, vaporizers, glass bongs, smoking pipes, even THCA flower, all in one place. Need a new daily driver? Grab a smooth glass bong or a classic smoking pipe. More of a concentrate fan? Their dab rigs, e-rigs, and wax accessories are designed for smoother, harder hitting sessions. And yes, they've even got legal THC flower. Best part? Every order ships fast and discreet, which is why thousands of smokers keep coming back. So don't waste time hopping between shops. Shop the best in dab rigs, vaporizers, glass bongs, smoking pipes, and THCA flower right now at headshop.com, the number one online smoke shop. Headshop.com has what you need. Check it out today. Oh, and because you're listening right now, You get 10% off your next order when you use the coupon code HSHOP at checkout. Go to headshop.com now and smoke smarter.